My name is Ryan Miller, and for the past 15 years, I've helped hundreds of people to raise millions of dollars for their funds and for their startups. If you're serious about raising money, launching your business, or taking your life to the next level, this show will give you the answers so that you too can enjoy your pursuit of making billions. Let's get into it. In this week's episode, I bring on the three-time entrepreneur John Dogru. Join John and I as he walks us through the Web3 technology that is transforming a $12 trillion industry. You do not want to miss it. Plus, John walks us through how he is disrupting the global manufacturing industry using NFTs and the blockchain to reduce friction and costs for entrepreneurs, founders, and investors around the planet. And by so doing, helps us all to gain the insights we need in our pursuit of making billions. Here we go. Hey, welcome to another episode of Making Billions. I'm your host, Ryan Miller, and today I have one of my very dear friends, John Dogru. So John is the founder and CEO of 3DOS.io. It's a Web3 platform that allows you to make money from 3D printer and all the designs right from your home office. So what this means is this guy is literally decentralizing 3D printing and manufacturing for the entire planet. We're going to bring him onto the show. He's going to tell us all about all of the cool stuff that he's inventing and everything that he's doing together. So John, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Ryan, for having me.
Yeah, it's so great to have you here. Man, I got to tell you, I've been so impressed with the technology that you've invented. You're going to get into all of that. But before we do and talk about all the cool stuff that you've invented and where it's going in the future into the metaverse and all of this cool stuff, maybe I'm sure a lot of our fans, both funders and founders around the world, are just curious of who is John and how did he get into this? So could you maybe do us a favor and walk us through where did it start for you? And then we'll get into kind of the current state. Where did it start?
Sure. I mean, as a young age, I was always hacking, making things. And then I quickly got into the internet before internet, pre-Gopher. So you kind of understand how old I am. And we used to do, you know, a lot of naughty things on the internet to get operator access. And yeah. then I went to do my EE at University of Texas at Austin. Yeah. And where I started my first startup, we did aircraft data. And we tried to pull it off the airlines, and we sold that to GE. After that, I worked for Dell as a lead engineer, and it was just amazing to see, you know, computers being built in real time. People would put their orders in, the computers would be built on the assembly line, and we would ship them custom, you know. So it was interesting how that whole supply chain worked together. And then I did a number of startups after that.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to make it easy for everyone to manufacture. As easy as it is today to create a website, you know, we're going from, you know, putting a website into production and the next day it's live.
Yeah.
And so, I'd actually moved to Estonia, where I met my co-founder.
Yeah.
And we started these 3D printers and I was like, wow, this could be the future.
Yes.
But I quickly realized they were computers were 40 years ago.
Yes.
They're all, don't own different software. They're very centralized. They're very complicated to use. Yeah. I was like, well, what if we could make this easy? What if we could make manufacturing as easy as one click? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my trajectory and how we got to develop 3DOS.
Wow. Absolutely incredible. And for many, for those of you that are listening, where his success started, I just want to highlight, it started by asking a higher quality question. Is to say, this is a mess. You didn't say that, I did, but this market is a mess. It's complicated. It's like where computers were 40 years ago. It's clunky. It's not that great. It's a good start, but how can we make this better, frictionless, whatever that is? And we're going to get into exactly how you responded and executed on answering and rolling out a solution to that part. So now you stood up 3DOS, and my understanding is it's used by like Google and other places. Maybe walk us through some of the use cases that you're starting to see.
Yeah, so 3DOS, the original name was 3D Printer OS. So 2014, we started this. So we're an established business. We're kind of like the Microsoft for 3D printing.
Yeah.
It's used by MIT, Harvard, Yale, Purdue, Duke, Caltech, top 50 universities in the world. It's used by Google in 45 locations, John Deere, Eaton. And we make it so easy. You can upload to a web browser design. So yeah. campus-wide, they can upload a design. With the click of a button, it goes straight live camera into a 3D printer. And today we've got over 120 countries, 180,000 users, 60,000 printers online. And it started as a SaaS solution.
Yeah.
And so now we understood that, you know, if you want to expand this to the world, if you want to give manufacturing to the world, it needs to be something that is decentralized, fully decentralized. And, you know, as you know, manufacturing is getting decentralized. You saw the issues during supply chain, people using 3D printing, converting Tesla factories to make COVID parts.
Yeah.
So the success we had in these microcosms, so if you think MIT is a microcosm, it has campus-wide students, they have an idea for a project, it could be an art project, it could be a heart pacemonitor, it could be an IoT clock, whatever.
Yes.
They need to build some kind of form factor.
Yeah.
They can just click a button in the middle of the night and the part is there in the morning without any human intervention. And I'll show you that soon.
Yeah. So that's phenomenal. So, I mean, every one of those names, their entrepreneurs would be just pumped out of their mind to get one of those people using their products. You've got them all. This is absolutely correct. So that alone is a testament of the confidence and just the sheer value that you're providing to the market and the economy. So, you know, this is from my, as an outsider, I can see that you're solving a lot of issues that people are struggling with, even right now in real time, right? So supply chains are stuck, there's geopolitical risks are rising. You know, and we were talking offline, you mentioned one of the cool things, and I really want to highlight this for funders and founders. One of the cool things that your solution provides is for founders who print tangible goods. And you mentioned like the old school way that a lot of people print a new product is they'll produce a new product is they'll have to order like 20,000 of them from China. And now you can literally construct one down the street from where you live and have one prototype showing up. I mean, that is absolutely incredible. That's one of thousands of use cases that you're doing. So this massively supports the entrepreneur ecosystem, which I'm sure why MIT and everybody else. This helps for rapid prototyping and innovation, which is, as we know, is very big in the startup community. So maybe you can walk us through, John. You mentioned, do you have any examples that you can walk our viewers through?
Let me share my screen, and I can show you guys exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
Let me know if you can see my screen.
Yep.
Okay, so what we're doing is we're smashing the barrier of entry. You had mentioned, let's say you want to build the next Ken Barbie, new Nike shoe. You would have to spend like 10, 40 grand, $1 million at least to get that made somewhere in the world. But then let's say you take all that risk and no one buys it, you're done. You're not going to try the next idea and the next idea and the next idea. And what the internet did for e-commerce is it allowed people to create websites overnight and try different ideas with low risk.
That's right.
And so this is our platform. It's in over 120 countries. We've got about 60,000 printers online. We've done 2.6 million parts. We have 9 million CAD files online. So let me show you how this works. We're also in the top 3D printer in PC Magazine. We've been selling our software inside this machine. This is the Bosch Dremel desktop printer. And you know, Harvard has 120 of these clustered together, allowing their students to just print anything they have in mind.
Yeah.
And so let me show you how this works. So let's say you've got an idea for this next iPhone case or Android case, and you know there's so many different form factors coming out.
Yeah.
You can easily upload it. This isn't a web browser. You don't need to download any applications. You can quickly model it. I can quickly hit print. I can log straight into the machine.
Yeah.
And this happened in real time. I'm actually in London right now, and I'm printing into America. And so here's a machine. We've actually live web camera view straight into the machine. And now we're taking over that machine, and it's going to start printing it. And so I'm going to cancel this part just because I'm a little far away. But you can see that we've got all these projects. So each of these is an idea. Imagine each of these is an NFT, you know, whether it's a bolt, you know, or you're making another action figure. and you want to start selling it, we can allow anyone to take an idea to manufacturing with zero latency and zero friction. And if it's not purchased, it's not made.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have any inventory, and you can test these ideas. Right. And just recently, you saw that Mattel started to 3D print, and you can actually scan your face from your iPhone. This just happened a few days ago. And you can, you know, create your own Ghostbuster character. So there's a lot of implications here where it's only made when it's needed. So this reduces a lot of waste, transportation, geopolitical, geographic issues.
Yes.
And so let's go into here and I'll show you something else. So this is actually Duke University we're logging into.
Yeah.
And here you can see they've got like fields of printers. And we were doing this before these printers even had network capability. So it's you know, I think school is not in session now, but you can see someone's building something. I don't know what it is, but whatever they have in mind looks like they're building a few of them.
Yes.
And they're doing that with a click of a button, you know, and this is in real time. So we've basically taken the latency from getting a design to production with zero time.
Right.
And this took us a long time to do this. So we've basically, created this platform, and it was mostly a SaaS solution platform where you can go in, you can manage users, people. Think of each of these as its own little microcosm.
Right.
And so I started looking at crypto, and I said, look, there's some things reminding me of the initial internet. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of junk projects, but there's going to be some real world value.
Right.
And I started to see these NFTs, and I said, that's interesting. Number one, people trust Bitcoin, this decentralized ledger.
Yes.
And for the last 8 years, I've been getting a lot of emails saying, hey, look, I want to be able to sell my designs. I want to protect my designs. I want to get royalties from my designs.
Mm-hmm.
And so up till now, you would have to have like four walls, physical walls to protect your designs. So when I saw people spending millions on Bored Apes, I said, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They're trusting it to some degree, but it's only worth what the next person buys it. What if we use the same NFT technology so that I upload an iPhone case?
Yeah.
And if a buyer in Africa, a buyer in China buys it, it's made locally, just like Uber locates cars locally, and it's printed.
Yes.
And so this is where I said, wow, NFTs can be really powerful because I can go to business and let's say in the beginning I sell one or two of these iPhone cases. Then I sell 100 of them. I sell 1,000 of them. What if we create a system where it's so easy, and we can upload a design, and it's fully elastic.
Yes.
And on the other side, people that have 3D printers, most of them are on idle. And it's not just desktop printers, it's industrial machines, and industrial machines in total. So we said, okay, well, if Bitcoin is peer-to-peer money, what if we create a protocol that's peer-to-peer manufacturing, where anyone can join, any designer can join, whether it's a catalog from Stanley Black & Decker, whether it's just Bob and his iPhone design, whether it's Hasbro and their Ghostbusters and G.I. Joes, anybody can join. And on the other side, all these manufacturers. So one of the big pain points with manufacturing today is you buy all this equipment and then you're going to spend 20-30% of your revenue for sales and marketing, broadcasting. Hey, I've got machines. I've got 3D printers. You're going to put it in Google Ads. You're going to put it in trade shows.
Right.
But what if, just like Bitcoin mining, as soon as that machine plugs into the wall, it can broadcast its capacity?
Right.
So now when you buy a 3D printer, it's like buying McDonald's. You're buying a machine that can make money for you.
Right.
And so we did a survey across all our users, and it was like 95% overwhelming. Everyone that owned a 3D printer said, yes, I want to make money from my 3D printer. Yes, I want to make money from my NFT designs. And so this is the genesis of 3DOS. We said, okay, let's create a protocol. When we can upload it, it creates an NFT. You know, we have like 9 million designs. So let's say we charged even $10 per design, like buying a website.
Yeah.
That helps pay for the mining fees. And there's some percentage we take. The manufacturer gets paid. And the buyer, once they receive it locally, there's on time to quality. And they can either pick it up locally or they can, you know, have it delivered. And so we started looking at this, and our first big enterprise use case was this part in Africa we did.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was for a mining company and they needed this Kawasaki part.
Yes.
And so they wanted this produced, and I forgot the money, but it's like millions of dollars a week that that machine is down. They're losing money.
Sheesh.
So yeah. Instead of like having to go through transport, customs, taxes, tolls, the idea was to print this critical part. So we uploaded it. Mm-hmm. We created an NFT. We locate the manufacturer, like Uber locates a car.
Yep.
We get it manufactured. It goes through some basic quality controls. And in this case, it was delivered locally, shipped locally, but at least it was able to go across continents. And in this case, it was a HP MJF printer, which is an industrial printer. They were able to put in the type of material, so BASF, Ultrasynt. And you've got full traceability. So one thing that's also very powerful about this is authenticity.
Yes.
So today, part of the supply chain is you don't know what parts are authentic.
Yeah.
But in this case, when I buy this part, so imagine Kawasaki has a parts catalog. I buy it from Kawasaki. They've got an address, a wallet address.
Yeah.
And when I buy it and I get it delivered, I know for a fact it came from Kawasaki. I know for a fact that Kawasaki approved this part to be built in this location. And so when I get it, I've got this advanced FedEx tracking type tracker, and I can see exactly, here's a smart contract.
Yeah.
It's Kawasaki's part. Kawasaki sent it to this manufacturer. This manufacturer delivered it on time to quality, including the shipping. And so we get this amazing protocol that allows any type of manufacturing capacity. And we're starting with 3D printing because we have 180,000 users. We have the 60,000 printers, but ultimately 3DOS vision is to really break into this $12 trillion on-demand manufacturing market where anyone that can manufacture, anyone that wants to buy the parts and any designs can live on this peer-to-peer network.
Wow. So first of all, my inner 12-year-old is geeking out that I could put my own head on a Ghostbuster or G.I. Joe. First of all, that is incredible. Second of all, I'm just picturing this company that's losing $1 million a day. I worked in heavy industrial in the energy industry for many years. I know what that's like. One thing goes down, one major component, and you're losing millions, if not tens of millions of dollars a day for these massive companies. Now you're saying, hey, man, you can, instead of, for example, Kawasaki producing it in their traditional plant, shipping it, customs, all that wait time, literally, they can just upload their design, print it in a local place where their customer is and say, yeah, here you go. It'll be there tomorrow. So not only does it improve, like you said, it reduces latency and it improves customer service, reduces costs. I mean, every angle, this is a game changer that you're able to get these parts to people on an industrial scale. That is absolutely phenomenal, but also on a personal scale. And so now you're creating this almost like, keep me honest, John. So you're creating an NFT store where designers can upload their design in the form of an NFT and they can make money off of that, whether it's like a bobblehead, a Ghostbuster, or an industrial part. Then you also have people who have printers in their office. They too could have a little side business, almost like an Amazon, like an FBA, where literally these things are printing on your desk and you just got to send them to people who've ordered it and printed it. And then finally, you also have university networks around the world that completely change the game for innovation. How am I doing so far?
You're doing great. That's exactly okay. Right.
All right,
we want to smash the barrier of entry for a designer. People have all kinds of ideas. And making physical things is core to our DNA.
Yes.
More people can make things than they can write C++ or even make a website.
Yep.
And so just like Wix and some of these other tools made it easier to make websites, we're making it super simple to get your design broadcasted for production around the world. Wow. And on the other side, the manufacturers, what's happening in the 3D printing world, some of these $200,000 printers, they became $20,000, they became $2,000, and some of them are now $200 doing the same thing that the 200,000 bar printers were. So people are now clustering 3D printers, just like they're clustering desktop computers in data centers.
Yes.
So 3D printing is a commodity. There's millions of these things around the world sitting on idle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what this network is, we help the entire 3D printing community to sell more machines. When we started at Duke, they had like 10 printers, 10 students. If you wanted something made, you have to send in a request form, upload your design. Someone have to download it. Imagine email was that way today. You had a request for someone to go to a mainframe, pull your email,
print it out.
Yeah. You would never have liftoff. So by taking this to real time, it changes the game. And that's what happened at Duke. You know, they went from 10 printers to 200 printers.
Yeah.
Google, when we launched, they had one location. It went to 40 locations because it's a web browser.
Wow.
To a basically server sitting inside of a printer.
Yeah.
And so it really helped people innovate quicker and take products to market. And now we want to give this to the world. We want people to build all kinds of applications on top of it. So whether it's fun stuff like the G.I. Joe or the metaverse, I mean, even if you just look at the metaverse today, look at Rovio. Rovio's revenue, 30% of their revenue comes from physical merchandising.
Right.
People at the end of the day still want real stuff. Like Elon Musk said, if you don't make stuff, there is no stuff. So people still do like physical things. And so imagine every single metaverse application where people have three-dimensional characters. They can click a button, it goes to 3DOS, and it sends your Mii bits to a friend as a present or to yourself, right? And then, of course, there's the industrial application. So you've got Stanley Black & Decker, an oil rig in the middle of nowhere, needs that part. Now, what they're having to do a lot of times on these aircraft carriers and oil rigs, these remote locations in the world, is they're having to re-engineer. They'll scan the broken part. Some guy will fix it on CAD and make it. Mm-hmm. There doesn't exist an easy way for the Stanley Black & Deckers of the world to upload their entire catalog, feel safe that they will get royalties, and at the same time, satisfy the customer. So we're kind of like the missing link between all the digital catalogs and the physical manufacturing facilities.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter like what marketplace, you know, we'll probably create a marketplace just to get it going, but you could put this toy or gadget on eBay. And as soon as someone buys on eBay, you know their address.
Yeah.
And it goes through 3DOS. We find a local place to make it and it gets made. So you don't have to carry any inventory on Amazon. You don't have to carry on Amazon. And if you're an Instagram influencer, you know all those people also want to create merchandising.
Yes.
So we're starting with 3D printing, but really this could be infinite, right? Infinite types of on-demand manufacturing, infinite types of supply chain inventories can be housed on this platform. So this is kind of the vision of 3DOS. And we'll start with fun stuff, just like we start with university students, these early adopters.
Yeah.
Just like the first computers were introduced to universities, the big guys didn't believe that the mainframes would go away.
Yeah.
And then what happened? Now Google has tons of desktop computers.
They believe it now. Yeah.
Yeah, they believe it now. So this is the vision of 3DOS.
This is so cool. So literally, especially in Silicon Valley, but all around tech is like, hey, like these big boys got to be careful. That next guy that's building something in his garage, where kind of where they all started, right? You look at these billion, if not trillion dollar tech companies started in a garage. And so now you're putting the power back into it. You're decentralizing printing and allowing people to prototype, but also all the way up to heavy industrial. Right. I see you got wind farms, oil rigs, aircraft carriers. I mean, these things have mass. They're just huge machines. And these things break down. Right. These things, heavy industrial is hard on machinery. And being able to decentralize, print a new part that you need, whether you're an offshore oil rig and you print it just right off the shore, you don't have to ship it from some factory around the world. It's literally printed in some factory right on the coast. They can just ship it right out, be up and running in a matter of days. The amount of losses that happen and that will be reduced because of you are astounding. So I'm certainly getting the vision now, and I hope our listeners around the world are seeing how disruptive this is, right? We celebrate the rebels. I would call you a rebel, a little troublemaker, and you're rocking the industry and mixing things up and being a rebel that we like to celebrate. So, man, this is absolutely phenomenal technology that you've invented, and you're only scaling up. And my understanding is you're going through a fundraising round right now. Is that right?
Yeah, we just started raising funds a few months ago, and we've got some really good investors from Stanford Blockchain, IoTeX, and a lot of other ones. We just joined the Alchemist Accelerator, which is top IoT accelerator. And, you know, right now my emails are flooded with people that want to use the technology. So I need to raise the funds. We have a lot of the core technology and build this layer too. So people can start to use it. You know, we want to democratize manufacturing for the masses.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be something that's only reserved for billion-dollar companies.
That's right.
You know, if we can break that barrier of entry for everybody, it changes the world. It changes the game. And, you know, as we talked before, if you don't make stuff, there is no stuff. If there is no stuff, there's no banks. There's no banks, there's no Wall Street in most of crypto.
Yeah.
Because without, if you remove, imagine you removed everyone that made stuff. There'd be no currency. You know, currency came from bartering items and physical goods. Trade. So, yeah, trade, exactly. So I think this is the core of, you know, our vision is, you know, one-click manufacturing. And we all know that this $12 trillion global manufacturing market is going digital.
Yeah.
And we've got an amazing team of people that believe in what we're doing. You know, I'm a three-time founder with two exits. Anton, our CTO, is in cloud computing, PhD robotics. Yep. We've got the top law firm with the SEC. Mm-hmm. We've got people from payments. We've got Ken, who's the vice president of GCAN. It's a $9.6 billion company. They do car parts, aircrafts. We've got Michelle Bachman from Stanley Black & Decker. We've got people from IP, from Thermo Fisher, you know, all these medical devices. So we've got a really kick-ass team. And, you know, we really want to bring this vision of one-click manufacturing to the world, whether it's on-planet or even off-planet. You probably see people 3D printing in remote locations in space now.
Oh, man.
And so it's endless what this can do.
Dude, saying that, you're gonna be buddies. You're going to bro down with Elon Musk in no time. I can feel it. So, yeah. Man, that is cool. So you mentioned that you've had other exits in the past. This isn't your first rodeo. I can tell it's very obvious that you're a very seasoned entrepreneur. Maybe for our fans around the world, what are some of the things that you found that are super helpful as far as building a company, running a venture-backed company, doing an exit, any of those areas that, you know, you can look back and say, you know, my parting advice to entrepreneurs, either funders or founders, is what are some of the things you wished you knew when you started out that you know now?
I think number one is it's a problem that you feel that really pains you inside for yourself. So for me, manufacturing, making it easy, whether I worked at Dell was like, you know, being able to configure a computer by, you know, online very easily versus getting a bunch of parts, you know, so you need to feel the pain and be passionate about it. If you're doing it to make money, it's the wrong way. You have to feel the pain. You need to also make sure that everyone else feels that pain too.
Sure.
So, you know, you need to really test. So, when I first started my, second company was called NewScribe, it was voice recognition in the cloud. It was a lot of doctors doing transcription notes. It's like Pentium 2s. It was like they were really slow. And, you know, back then, Windows, it worked great on the first day you installed it. But after 10 days, those registries would get corrupt. So I kind of made like an Xbox type device. And I said, okay, well, there is voice recognition. The doctors do want to reduce, you know, $25 million a year. About $1 million a year is like 25 doctors spend on voice recognition in a small office. So by having it in real time, and, you know, we built like an Xbox type device that would erase the hard drive, reload Windows every morning. So when the doctor got to write his notes, it was very fast. So it's got to be a pain that you feel, other people feel, and then that you know you can solve. So I think that's number one.
Yes.
And then number two is you need to like immediately start to try to collect checks from customers. So my first experience with NewScribe trying to sell the product, it was like maybe like 10% done.
Yeah,
I immediately went to the doctor's office and I said, "Look, it's going to be $7,000 for one of these Xboxes, but I'll give it to you for like a cost of $2,000.
Right.
If you're an early adopter.
Yes.
And so I had a lot of people saying, "No, wait till it's finished. Things are never going to be finished. You want to get the minimum viable product out,
okay,
and start testing it and learn with the customers. I mean, Tesla did this as well, right? There was a lot of kinks in those first cars.
Sure.
So a product is never ready. And I think one of the most uncomfortable things for entrepreneurs is to get out of their comfort zone. So if you're not used to selling, you need to sell the product even before it's ready.
Yeah.
Right. You can even go beyond that and say, like, here's where I think the problem is and people need it, and just get a bunch of registrations.
Right.
And so you need to iterate around the customer. The best advice I got from my dad's friend from Stanford, he said, F the business plan. You know, the first order of business is business.
Yes.
Right. So you want to make sure you have a problem that really pains a lot of people.
Right.
And you know you can solve it, you're passionate about it, and then go ahead and start trying to sell it to those people.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly iterate your model, your design around that.
Right. And so by doing that, what is the outcome? What does that mean for founders? So when you're doing that, you follow that discipline. Like, why not go old school, build the business plan? Like, what's the advantage of taking this route? I fully agree with you, but I want to hear from you. Like, so getting out there, selling it before it's done. Like, why would somebody follow that rather than the traditional way you're taught of build a business plan, then go to a bank and get a loan? And why go that way?
I guess, would you trust a guy that wrote a book on karate or actually got his ass kicked in the hood, you know, over and over again? Like, you know, so you need to get your ass kicked right away.
Yeah.
And a business plan is just hypotheticals. You can't imagine what's going to come across. You may pivot. You may go to a customer and says, you know what? I didn't need that, but I need this.
Yeah.
You can't be agile, right? So you need to be very agile. And that's the benefit of a startup. See, big enterprises, one of the reasons small companies can out-execute big companies is because they can be agile.
Companies
have a lot of risk. They need to write a business plan, do risk assessments. What's the impact if we get this wrong? And so they get stuck.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think a business plan is the old way of doing things, raising a bunch of capital. The new way, like my last company, NewScribe, I started with zero money, you know, I was working at Dell. I kept my day job and I went and started doing this prototype. Sometimes I wouldn't sleep for 24, 48 hours.
Ooh.
And then the first people I brought on were some of my friends that were salespeople. And we started not even in the garage. We started in a friend's washing machine room, then expanded the garage and expanded. And we had one computer that we were doing demos on and we were sharing that. And so I started that with zero money.
Yeah.
And then we raised like, you know, $500K check, and we sold out quickly for like $9 million in like a year. That was a quick exit.
Yeah.
But you don't really, if you have skills yourself, then you don't really need that much money. Now, of course, you're a hardware company, you probably do, but now 3D printing has also reduced that cost. If you look at an IoT startup, they have 3D printers. So there is technologies out there that can reduce the barrier of entry. And that's what we hope to do with 3DOS, is really smash the barrier of entry for entrepreneurs trying to make physical items.
Wow. That is incredible. So rapid prototyping, being agile, I call it rapid innovation. You hear these all get tied into the agile methodology. But getting out there, from what I'm hearing, getting out there early as you're developing it, almost jump off the cliff and build your wings on the way down, as they say. So doing that allows you to get the early feedback you need, which, you know, if you build it, they will come kind of method is a little old school. And I would say it's a big reason why a lot of companies fail, is because they build something that's awesome that nobody wants. And so getting out there, building that, figuring out what does my market want, test these little components, keep doing that rapid innovation from that feedback. And you'll be able to do, like you said, a $9 million exit on your first one. That's a good go. I mean, anybody would high five that on their first thing, and you kept going. And so learning this rapid innovation sounds like, according to you, is one of the key things to success. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And there's so many cool tools now that help help society get there. So just like the web browser, like Steve Jobs said, he knew there'd be a day overnight someone can create a website that looks like Apple.com and be in business. And it's true, right? So look at all these e-commerce people selling, you know, Amazon, Shopify, like we're smashing that barrier of entry for the common person to go and compete against these big dogs, right?
That's right.
Now, manufacturing, it's still really old school.
Yeah.
It's still really tough. And even with 3D printers today, they're completely out of reach for a lot of people. And let's say you bought a 3D printer for yourself, you can only print one part. You can't just click a button and boom, it's in production around the world in milliseconds.
Yeah. Wow, I love that. So as we look, we've covered a lot of ground in a very short amount of time, man. This is, I'm totally geeking out, man. I don't know. I'm gonna print a bobblehead or something, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we'll do, but I'm gonna be using this product, man. This is really cool. So as we round third base, head home on our discussion on decentralized printing and metaverse and everything there. Is there any last minute things that you would like to share? Anything at all that you'd like to, you think our listeners would want to know?
Yeah, I mean, number one is if you're interested, you know, definitely can contact me at my email, which is john@3dos.io. Okay. Or you can go to our website, 3dos.io. You can Google my name. So number one is community, people that are very interested in this product and taking things to market. Don't hesitate to contact me. We're here to help you, right? This is a problem that's been pent up, and it's not just small people, it's big companies too. You know, so we're also looking for big company partnerships. We've got another partnership that we're about to announce in a few weeks. It's with a pretty interesting company that makes it easy for people to once you've manufactured something to really scale it. So we go from zero to hero. They take you from hero to superhero. So once you've gone past 3D printing, you want to go to injection molding, you want to make the next Fitbit. So we're partnering with them because 90% of their customers, they need to reject because they don't have a system that allows someone that has almost no money to get into the game. Yeah. So I think combining those forces, I think is pretty powerful. So yeah, look, we're here to help everyone in the world. We see a world where everyone's a manufacturer.
Yeah.
And, happy to share my thoughts and give you a sneak peek into the product.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly been generous on providing that sneak peek today. For those of you who are listening, you can see the screen on YouTube. You can go ahead and subscribe there. You can see how John shared his screen, showed the map around the world where 60,000 printers are on his network. He walked us through all kinds of cool stuff. So thank you for your generosity. And also just thanks for being a rebel, man, and really pushing against the status quo and finding a better way. This literally will change the world of manufacturing. I can't wait to see your success. So in parting notes, learn about rapid innovation, agile, get out there, test your idea in the market, make sure that people want it, make sure that you're developing something that not only bothers you, but bothers a lot of people, and then go ahead and solve that problem. You do that, and you too will be well on your way in your pursuit of making billions. Wow, what a show. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to leave a comment and review on new ideas and guests you want me to bring on for future episodes. Plus, why don't you head over to YouTube and see extra takes while you get to know our guests even better. And make sure to come back for our next episode where we dive even deeper into the people, the process, and the perspectives of both investors and founders. Until then, my friends, stay hungry, focus on your goals, and keep grinding towards your dream of making billions.